The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for April is a story about one man's journey from death row executioner to Lutheran pastor. It's titled The Executioner's Redemption, My Story of Violence, Death, and Saving Grace. You can check it out at issuesetc.org or call Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040. The Executioner's Redemption is on sale for $12.99. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month, The Executioner's Redemption.
And the great link is it was the blood of the Lamb that saved the Jewish people. And in Christianity, it was the blood of the Lamb of God that saves all of us.
It doesn't mean that you don't do everything possible to try to fulfill your obligations, but it does not include sacrificing the woman's right to make decisions.
Of course, at the very end, she says, but that doesn't mean that the fetus is not something that the woman can destroy for her own interest, which means that it is both priceless and worthless at the same time.
The culture in which we live in, it has replaced religion with sport.
Pro Football Hall of Fame wives, Love Issues, etc.
We've seen it happen so often. I don't know why it is. Maybe it's a kind of a inferiority complex that is woven into the American Lutheran psyche. Having come to the shores of this country largely during a time of evangelical revival, maybe we just feel like we're always playing second fiddle to American evangelicalism. It certainly shows in the fact that Lutherans often imitate American evangelicals down to the very last detail, even sometimes in their theology. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc., coming to you live from the studios of Lutheran Public Radio in Collinsville, Illinois. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to be hearing from Craig Parton making the case against Lutherans imitating evangelicals for the first hour or so of this Thursday's program. Then Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer will join us. We'll be doing our series, Christ in the Old Testament Today, Isaiah 65, Part 2, talking more about judgment and salvation. Craig Parton was the keynote speaker at the second annual Issues Etc. Making the Case conference back in 2014. He's a regular guest and attorney in Santa Barbara, California, United States Director of the International Academy of Apologetics, Evangelism, and Human Rights, and author of the books The Defense Never Rests and Religion on Trial. Here's his presentation, Making the Case Against Lutherans Imitating Evangelicals.
Thank you. I'm actually going to make the affirmative case for Lutheran worship and the historic opportunity that as Lutherans we have because evangelicalism is decaying in many places and looking for an opportunity to find normalcy and content in Christian worship. And there aren't many choices out there. And Lutheranism has this uncanny ability to hide its light under a bushel. It's rare to me. A church that has more gifts in terms of Christian worship is less known to evangelicals and considered basically either liberal or Catholic and too stupid to know it's both. So, we're going to talk about the historic opportunity that Lutheranism has in terms of evangelicalism. So I'm going to first talk about evangelicalism because leave it to the Lutheran Church to want all the discarded crap from evangelicalism and evangelical worship, jumping on that boat at the moment evangelicals are leaving it. And it's my generation, the baby boomer generation, that frankly needs to die to leave all these entertainment orientation, market orientation, me orientation, what can the church do for me today? That kind of perspective in the Lutheran churches, which is really needs to be extirpated in some way. So we're going to talk about evangelicalism. I'm going to explain to you what the historical roots of evangelicalism are so that you can understand what the glory of evangelicalism is today. It's not what Lutherans think it is. And then a little bit about what the agony of American evangelicalism is. And then we're going to look at what the options are for the seeking evangelical, looking for content and normalcy. As I say to pastors, I'll be the easiest parishioner you ever had. All I want is law and gospel, the hymnal, Christian hymnody, the liturgy. Absolve me, get the bread and wine into my mouth, and I won't cause trouble. Don't do that, and I will be a nightmare to you. That's all, and that is the word of many evangelicals. They're not looking to change the Lutheran church, just looking for you to be something crazy called Lutheran. Might be tough to do. Okay, we're going to look first at evangelicalism. Let me, Todd mentioned past in evangelicalism. It's probably worth a few words about what my bona fides are in terms of being an evangelical. I grew up in a Christian Science home. I grew up in California. Everyone's a cultist. We have a spare afternoon. We create a religion. So I grew up in a cult that was nothing unusual. The Mind Science cult of Christian Science. Never had a medication, never had a Advil till I was 18. Saw people in auto accidents, never go to the hospital. Saw everybody avoid any confrontation with evil, death, and the consequences of it, supposedly. And I went off to college as a pagan. My dad had died when I was in high school. It's in Defense Never Rest, kind of how that played out. But I went to college a complete pagan and went to the university there in California in San Luis Obispo to the freshman dorm. And I had not unpacked my bags, this is literally true, before evangelical parachurch organization types descended on my body. And I had just checking in, and what had happened was a senior there had taken over as resident advisor of the freshman dorm. He was with InterVarsity. And he thought so strategically that freshmen are the place that you can really still influence somebody in the future. Aside, people here from the seminary, here's my suggestion to the leaders of the seminary. Send everybody who graduates from the seminary for the next 10 years to the top campuses in the country, to the freshman dorms, to evangelize the next generation. That's what I would do if I was president of the Synod. Thank you for your vote. Instead, we send everybody to Cowbutt, Nebraska, for 12 people, and we take care of our people, which is important to do with word and sacrament, while the culture goes to hell, and we get together in conferences and talk about how the culture's going to hell. Freshman dorms, a lot happens in freshman dorms. And that is the place that I think focus on evangelism in the future ought to be. But anyway, in the freshman dorm, I was descended upon by both Campus Crusade and InterVarsity. They went after me, hammer and tong. They had apologetic works by C.S. Lewis, Josh McDowell. I'd get a question out. They'd answer it. The next day, they say, are you going to receive Christ now? I said, I haven't had a chance to look at this very much. Well, you've looked at it plenty. You're a sinner. Now, you need to be saved. I resisted this for quite a while. I went off for a while the freshman year. But ultimately, this kind of persistent effort paid its fruit. And I went on staff with Campus Crusade, which is now called CRU, but it was called Campus Crusade for Christ, which were really kind of the Marines of evangelicalism. I had become a Christian my sophomore year in college. I was a Christian about 10 minutes, and they had me speaking in the free speech platform. I mean, that's Campus Crusade. They don't take you aside for 7 years to bring you along like Paul and others. They get you out there. I thought apologetics and evangelizing anything with a pulse was what Christians did. I didn't think it was left to, you know, committees. That only after we became Lutherans did I understand that's a unique Lutheran contribution to evangelism. We have a committee on evangelism. I had never been in a Baptist church that had a committee. We just did evangelism. You just talk to friends, you talk to neighbors, what have you. So anyway, I spent these years on Campus Crusade and many of them traveling to campuses across the country and evangelical churches. So I've been in charismatic churches, mainline denomination churches, all kinds of evangelical settings. The Academy in Strasbourg always has a healthy contingent of Baptists. We've had charismatics. We've had several charismatics become Lutherans. We've had all kinds of evangelicals there teaching apologetics. Well, when I was speaking for Campus Crusade and doing apologetics, I was looking for further training in the defense of the faith and ran into two people, John Warwick Montgomery and Rod Rosenblatt, who were equipping people in the defense of the Christian faith. And I quickly realized that these guys could teach at a depth level I had never heard in evangelicalism before. And it was Christocentric. And the apologetic was Christ-centered and of the greatest persuasive ability. So I spent several years with Montgomery and with Rosenblatt. I found out they were both Lutherans. This is kind of the way the academy goes. We don't teach systematic theology, but ultimately people want to know, where do you go to church? And when they find out you're a Lutheran, they file that in the background. Lutheran. Lutheran equals liberal or Catholic or, worse, both.
We will pick up on the other side. We're listening to Craig Parton at his keynote speaking engagement at the second annual Issues Etc. Making the Case conference back in 2014, making the case against Lutherans imitating evangelicals. Well, that's kind of the common view, isn't it, of Lutherans in the evangelical world? They're liberal or too Catholic or usually both. How did he deal with it? We'll find out right after this.
Did you know that Luther Academy has been providing continuing education for confessional Lutheran pastors and laypeople worldwide for more than 20 years? Luther Academy publishes Logia, the Confessional Lutheran Dogmatics Series, and Luther Digest. Find out more about Luther Academy and sign up to receive their free email newsletter at lutheracademy.com, lutheracademy.com, and like them on Facebook, facebook.com/lutheracademy.
The Divine Service is where Christians gather around word and sacrament. We join together to receive God's gifts in the liturgy. But do you know the meaning behind what we do? There's a book called Ceremony and Celebration that explains Lutheran liturgical worship. Find out more and read book excerpts online at emmanuelpress.us. emmanuelpress.us. You'll find answers to your liturgical questions in Ceremony and Celebration, emmanuelpress.us.
A voice in the wilderness of American evangelicalism, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Throughout the 50 days of Easter, sacred music for the world, LutheranPublicRadio.org. Listen 24/7 to sacred music for the Easter season. LPR, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
The 27th Annual Congress on the Lutheran Confessions, sponsored by the ACL and Luther Academy, is April 6th through the 8th in Bloomington, Minnesota. The Confessional Lutherans for Christ's Commission will present two seminars. On Tuesday, April 5th, Pastor Rob Jarvis offers an overview of the Reformation and our confessions. On Wednesday, April 6th, Pastor Jeremiah Johnson presents Catechesis Begins in the Home, Practical Ways to Pass on the Faith to Our Children. Learn more at theclcc.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're listening to Craig Parton making the case against Lutherans imitating evangelicals from the 2014 Issues Etc. Making the Case conference. Before the break, Craig noted that while he was still transitioning from evangelicalism to Lutheranism, to him, Lutheran meant what it means to a lot of evangelicals. It meant either liberal, Catholic, or both.
And that's exactly what I thought Lutheranism was basically about. But I thought their teaching sources were the best in Christendom. So I started teaching the small catechism in a Baptist church. And you think that's funny maybe now, but I can tell you there are Baptists doing that today. Why? Because I was considered brilliant in the Baptist church to teach the catechism. Oh, where does this stuff come from? Well, I did a lot of study over the weekend. This is the clearest stuff we've ever heard in our life. It was a long Saturday night preparing for this Sunday school class. They absolutely ate it up. But I did tell them it was from Luther's small catechism. I taught the sacraments. When I got to the sacraments, I'd say, now, this is where we disagree with classical Lutheran theology. There are no Lutherans like this. I just assume there's Montgomery, there's Rosenblatt, and then there's liberal Lutherans. They're those people, they wear, you know, liturgical gowns to hide their liberalism and that kind of stuff. So I just figured that this was something very, very odd that they happened to have, that they were just unusual people. So I had this teaching going on. We got to the sacraments, and I would simply say, now we're going to get to Luther's view of the sacraments, and all I can say is he does this with verses. And it appears to me all you get if you go with Luther is more of the scripture. Okay? We're the ones who are allegorizing and taking as symbolic what's going on in the sacraments, though of course we take it completely literally when we get to eschatology. That we're doing completely literal. Daniel, Book of Revelation, Revelation 20, 21. We know the weekend Jesus is coming back. We know exactly what's referenced here. But when it comes to this is my body, symbolic. So that tension lasted for about 15 years, reading Lutheran theology. And there's people today that are looking in at Lutheranism. I've talked to some that are here today that are looking in from the outside because of the theology. Ultimately, this sounds really sterile, but I read my way into the Lutheran church. No Lutherans ever came and said, we have a nicer potluck, because I wouldn't have shown up at it. The social gatherings we were at as evangelicals were tons of fun. All our friends were evangelicals. But we started to hear this message of the Reformation through Rosenblatt Montgomery giving us study materials that we used in the churches that we were in, a big Baptist church. We began listening to the White Horse Inn. Some of you know the radio show. About 20 of us, and we don't have a huge living room. Some of you here have been in it. But we would gather in our living room at 9 o'clock Sunday night, turn on White Horse Inn, and there Rod Rosenblatt would talk about what you should be hearing on Sunday morning. And we thought, this is fantastic. Why didn't we hear this Sunday morning? We heard entertainment. We heard a lot of moralism. But we didn't hear the gospel. So it began thinking that there's something wrong with our Sunday diet. There's no pulpit doing long gospel. The hymnody was frankly pathetic. It was my age group people thinking they were cool in front of everyone else. My kids thought they were morons, which they were. And the music was pretty poor. The theology in Sunday schools in general, there was no resources. There's no liturgy. There's no confession. There's no hymnody. It was really bankrupt. We were desperate. So we made our initial entree into Eastern Orthodoxy before coming to Lutheranism. We have a very, very vibrant, very aggressive Eastern Orthodox community in Santa Barbara, where former Campus Crusade national staff have all left evangelicalism, gone into Orthodoxy, and they come after you hammer and tong about converting to Eastern Orthodoxy, and I'll talk about that in a moment. So look very, very seriously at that. But ultimately, the wheels fell off the bus of evangelical worship, and we were forced to find something else. And I called Rosenblatt finally in desperation and said, okay, I give up. Okay, I'm going to try a Lutheran church. What do you suggest? He said, I have no suggestions. I don't know any names to give you. But he said, all I can say is you can try a Missouri Synod church. He said, you know, he was praying, God, may there be a faithful pastor there. Maybe. just please go to Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod, and just ask the pastor and ask the question, what do they say about Christ in the service? See if you agree with it. Don't worry about the youth group. I said we don't care anymore about youth groups. We just want the truth, and we want some normalcy and content again in Christian worship. And I'll talk about that in a moment. So anyway, it's been a long journey from evangelicalism to Lutheranism. I'll talk about it in a second. But I think I have enough contact with evangelicals today to be talking about where evangelicals are at this very moment in American Christianity. To understand evangelicalism, I want to spend just a couple of minutes on its history, because I think it's important. The roots of American evangelicalism are found in three centuries and three basic ideas. One is in 17th century pietism, from which evangelicalism gets its emphasis on the heart. I'll talk about that for just a moment. Second is the influence of 18th century Methodism, where it gets its emphasis on the Christian life. And finally, is in the 19th century, revivalism and its emphasis on being born again. If you understand where evangelicalism gets its emphasis on the heart, on the Christian life, and being born again, you can understand our evangelical brethren. Notice the roots of evangelicalism are not in the Reformation, and they are certainly not attracted initially to the conservative Lutheran Reformation. Luther sought to conserve as much of church practice as possible unless it violated the gospel. It was a very high level of small c Catholicity to Luther's liturgical practices. He would be off the chart today. Basically, it was, you know, the church hasn't been an idiot for 1,500 years. The practice is done. It doesn't offend conscience. It doesn't offend the gospel. Keep it. You know, processional cross, genuflect at the altar, A, B, C, how you handle the elements in the Lord's Supper, all of that. Fine, keep it. That presents even more of an obstacle to evangelicals. They have to be pretty desperate to end up in a Lutheran church because of the Catholicity. You don't even understand how Catholic things are because you might have grown up in Lutheran churches. But we'll talk about that in a moment. So first, the emphasis of 17th century pietism on evangelicalism. The Reformation of the 16th century was followed by what is known as the Age of Lutheran Orthodoxy, or the 17th century. It's the last great Christian century. The emphasis was on objective truth, on doctrine, and on systematizing the theology of Luther. Luther was not a systematic theologian. He was a pastoral theologian. He did not systematize the Reformation's insights from the Book of Romans and the recapture and the rediscovery of the gospel. That was largely left to the late 16th century, and particularly the 17th, and the age of Lutheran Orthodoxy. But by the end of this 17th century, people were saying, this is kind of dry. You know, all this doctrine, it doesn't have it for me. We should be emphasizing personal experience more. In the 17th century, you had a group of pietists that emphasized things like practical preaching.
We're listening to Craig Parton, an attorney in Santa Barbara, California, making the case against Lutherans imitating evangelicals from the 2014 issues, etc., Making the Case conference. When we come back, what he has come to regard as two good signs of a faithful church. Stay tuned.
Have you been too busy to get your associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree? Concordia University, Wisconsin offers 50 online educational options. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Click the Concordia University online logo and enter the program code ISSUES to waive your application fee. Concordia University, Wisconsin is here to strengthen and support the church. Lifelong Lutheran learning. issuesetc.org and click Concordia University, Wisconsin online.
Have you recently graduated from high school or college and are still making up your mind about your future career? Here's an opportunity to serve your neighbor through an extended, uniquely Lutheran service program. It's called the Lutheran Youth Corps. Find out more about the Lutheran Youth Corps at lcms.org/youthcorps. Life together through witness and mercy, the Lutheran Youth Corps. lcms.org/youthcorps.
For 20 years, we've lifted our voices and instruments to the hymns of Stephen Starkey. Now, CPH has the first ever CD collection of Pastor Starkey's works titled, We Praise You and Acknowledge You, O God. This 12-track CD includes nearly an hour of music from the most beloved Lutheran hymn writer of our time. Order now. Use promotion code URA. We Praise You and Acknowledge You, O God is only $15.99. CPH.org.
In my family, education means cultivating wisdom and virtue by teaching what is good, true, and beautiful. Memoria Press makes this type of education possible with their classical Christian curriculum. Characterized by simplicity, quality, and affordability, Memoria Press gives my children a rich classical education. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
The faith, once for all, delivered to the saints. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. The Lutheran Church of the Good Shepherd in Greenville, South Carolina. St. Paul Lutheran, Chatfield, Minnesota. St. John Lutheran, Napoleon, Ohio. First Lutheran, Lufkin, Texas. Concordia Lutheran, Sykeston, Missouri. Hope Lutheran, Granite City, Illinois. Trinity Lutheran, Gladson, Alabama. And Lord of Life Lutheran, Chesterfield, Missouri. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, click support, and print a one-page flyer. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll advertise your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. issuesetc.org, click support. The Issues Etc. 300. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. On this Thursday, April the 14th, we're listening to Craig Parton making the case against Lutherans imitating evangelicals. In the second hour of the program, Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer will join us at about 15 after. We'll be continuing our series, Christ in the Old Testament, today, Isaiah 65, Part 2 on Judgment and Salvation. Let's get back to Craig Parton's presentation from the 2014 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference. Here he is, given what he just said before the break about the influence of pietism, what he came to regard as two good signs of a faithful congregation.
Does this sound vaguely familiar? Pastor, you don't preach nearly as practical enough. That's always a good sign to me. The second good sign is when I was going to a town, the first thing I asked is, could you tell me where a dead Orthodox church is? Because I would like to attend one. That's the best sign in my culture alive. Anyway, so this is in the end of the 17th century. People were saying we need more practical preaching. We need more small groups. They were anti-sacramental. They were anti-creedal. People like Franke and Spener and Zinzendorf. Pietists did not like the stress on creeds and the objectivity of particular Reformation doctrine. Pietism stresses what goes on in your heart, the subjective emphasis as compared to Luther's gospel, which was entirely extra nos, entirely outside of ourselves. As Dr. Schmidt was saying, this thing is, it's not true because you have faith in it. Same with Luther's gospel. It was true in spite of whether you ever believed it or not. Stress was on what has gone on in the Reformation, what has gone on outside of you, objectively, in spite of you. That the emphasis on the sacraments, God coming to you. The whole emphasis of Lutheran theology is God to us, doing things for us that we could never do on our own. So, the pietist said, you know, that's so objective, that's so dry, that's so sterile. We could spruce up these services a little more. They had PowerPoint. No, that wasn't quite it. That was in my notes. No, they did not have PowerPoint. But the emphasis was on looking inward. and looking at the Christian heart as an answer. What's your heart? What's the heart relationship you have with the Lord? You find this in evangelicalism tremendously today, where there's this constant reflection on what's going on in the interior of your soul. Of course, we as Lutherans know what's going on. Sin. We've have been born again by the waters of baptism. By the way, that's something that Lutherans, if I was to ask, are you born again or not, and you didn't raise your hand, I'd have a problem with you. Lutherans have a doctrine of being born again. Okay? It's called usually by the waters of baptism if they haven't been born again through the preached word and being converted through that means. Anyway, Pietism emphasized your heart. But it was very clear that as Pietism said, hey, everything that's worth knowing is worth knowing in the heart, they could never maintain a solid theology as a result of that. Once they began looking subjectively and internally, there was no stopping and turning back. Evangelicalism's historical roots go back to Pietism in the 17th century. But there is a reaction to Pietism even in the 18th century with Wesley's Methodism. That's the second component to American evangelicalism. First component, 17th century Pietism. Second component, 18th century Wesleyan Methodism. Wesley was reacting against this kind of dead orthodoxy that we just talked about. He was really reacting against a rationalism that had developed in the church earlier than his time. He called it a dead orthodoxy. He truly discovered the gospel. He remained an Anglican his whole life, and he preached the gospel. However, Wesley did not see that what the real problem was. The real problem was that the gospel hadn't been preached. Wesley, though, never went back thoroughly to Luther and the Reformation. Said Wesley, "No man has a greater understanding of justification than Martin Luther, and no man has less of an understanding of sanctification than Martin Luther." There was the emphasis on the Christian life. The irony is some Methodists are the best teachers on Luther today. People like Philip Watson, or at least their books have been, Brian Gerrish, and others. Wesley said, "Luther got justification right, and I will get sanctification right." And he wrote a book called A Plain Account of Christian Perfection. This is all very important in terms of understanding American evangelicalism. Thus, while Scripture is to be believed, the gospel is to be preached, the focus moves to your reaction to the gospel rather than the objectivity of the gospel and what it has done for us. Sanctification begins to swallow up justification. Sanctification is the primary focus of American evangelical preaching. I wondered whether Lutheranism had a doctrine of sanctification. They do. It's talking about the forgiveness of sins and the life lived out in gratitude for our justification. There is definitely a doctrine of sanctification. But in evangelicalism, it's counter. They go with the concept that the law is there to whip you into shape to do the good works that you should be doing. And that's what the purpose of the law is, to get you motivated and get you in shape and motivate you to go forward in the Christian life. So with Wesley, we get the concept of sanctification and evangelicalism. From Pietism, we got the idea of the relationship and the focus on the heart. That led to the 19th century, one last influence on American evangelicalism. It's 19th century and its emphasis on revivalism or conversion. Have you been born again? That's always important to an evangelical. When I was on staff with Campus Crusade, I never met one Lutheran I believe was saved. I just tell you, I never did. Now, these are your children going to secular university. I would see them in the dining hall, and I would saunter up to them when I was on staff with Crusade, because we did random evangelism all the time. Random, whoever happened to be breathing, we would confront and talk to about Jesus Christ. And go to a Lutheran, I would say, "Hello, how you doing? Or you happen to have some time to talk about Jesus Christ?" "Oh, yeah, I'm really open to that. I'm a Christian." When did you become a Christian? When I was baptized. Ah, I have some talking to you to do. That couldn't possibly be the case. And I could have used a good witness from them at that point, how they had been born again, been a God-hater in rebellion, conceived in sin, and were brought miraculously out of it by the Word working through the water. But I didn't have anyone present the gospel back to me when I talked to them about their baptism. 19th century revivalism emphasizes the fact of conversion and being born again. This is where we get the camp meeting, the revival, the walk down the aisle. My wife is born and bred Baptist. All the family on her side are all Baptists. They are Bible-believing Baptists, which I believe is the future of the Lutheran Church. Give me one Bible-believing Baptist who converts to Lutheranism, and I will burn the town down. No, it will rock the place, because Bible-believing Baptists and Lutherans have an awful lot in common. When it came to revivals in evangelicalism, it's the concept of walking down the aisle once again and to show your commitment to Christ, being born again. As my wife said, she walked down the aisle, you know, 50 different times, raised the hand a number of different times. But that's all part of evangelicalism's concept of being born again. And the way that you have security that you've been born again is to look inward and to see how your life is measured up. Those are the historical elements that go into American evangelicalism. Emphasis on the heart, emphasis on sanctification, emphasis on being born again. So, what now are the glories of American evangelicalism? If you thought I was here to criticize American evangelicalism, you should find a different speaker. Maybe you want to change out speakers now. The glory of American evangelicalism, what Lutherans can learn from evangelicals, a couple of things. First, historically, evangelicalism set itself against a growing Protestant liberalism and a growing deterioration that the Bible was without error. Historically, evangelicals have been very solid on the doctrine of inerrancy. The scripture is being without error in the original autographs. I first heard a Lutheran speak on inerrancy at the Congress on Biblical Inerrancy in 1975, a guy named Robert Preuss. Blew my socks away. Again, I just put him with Montgomery and with Rosenblatt. This is an oddball. He has a church that is a whole state. It's Missouri. I thought, all of us evangelicals thought, a cool place to live would be Missouri because we could be with the Preuss. That would be a definite thing to go do. But the Missouri Synod completely passed us by as a concept. But evangelicalism has stood against a growing Protestant liberalism, at least historically it has, and a strong stand on the inerrancy of Scripture. What is religious Protestant liberalism? I like George Will's definition of a religious liberal, somebody who will believe anything unless it's in the Bible.
We're listening to Craig Parton making the case against Lutherans imitating evangelicals from the 2014 Issues, Etc. Making the Case conference. Folks, if you appreciate the Christ-centered cross-focused teaching like this, you won't want to miss the fourth annual Issues, Etc. Making the Case conference. It's June the 10th and the 11th this summer in Collinsville, Illinois. Speakers this year include Dr. Larry Rast, Pastor Will Whedon, Pastor Chris Rosebrough, Adrian Dorr Hines, Pastor Jonathan Fisk, Dr. Carl Fakencher, and Pastor Brian Wolfmiller. Attendance is limited to 400 and registration is $100. You can find out more by calling 618-223-8385, 618-223-8385, or visit issuesetc.org. The 2016 Issues, Etc. Making the Case conference, Friday, June the 10th and Saturday, June the 11th in Collinsville, Illinois. When we come back, we'll hear more from Craig Parton on liberal Christianity.
Oh Lord, open my lips.
Listen to chapel services live, weekday mornings from Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Morning chapel from Kramer Chapel. Live, weekday mornings at 9 Central, 10 Eastern, 8 Mountain, and 7 Pacific at issuesetc.org.
Emmanuel means God with us. God is with us at Emmanuel Lutheran Church and School at 1285 Main Street in Hamilton, Ohio, near Cincinnati. God is with us as we gather on Sunday at 8 and 10:45 a.m. for divine service. God with us in his word of forgiveness, with us in the waters of baptism, with us in the body and blood of Christ in Holy Communion, with us in the classrooms of our school and childcare, serving children from age 3 to 8th grade. Join us for worship or enroll your child in our Christ-centered day school. Find us at emmanuelhamilton.com.
It's not about you. It's about Jesus for you. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
The means of grace are the very thing that evangelicals are looking for.
Chris Roseborough talking about his presentation at this summer's Issues, Etc. Making the Case Conference.
And so in my presentation, we will talk about some of the alternative means of grace that evangelicals have created in their quest to find some kind of certainty of their own salvation. But then we will then explore back and look at what God's Word says regarding baptism, the Lord's Supper, as well as holy absolution as the means by which, you know, these are outside of us, that God gives us signs and assurance that we are forgiven and in Him and have a right standing with Him.
You can meet and hear Chris Roseborough making the case for the means of grace June 10th and 11th at the 2016 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference in Collinsville, Illinois. For more information, visit issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference. Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. On this Thursday afternoon, April the 14th, we're listening to Craig Parton making the case against Lutherans imitating evangelicals from the 2014 Issues, Etc. Making the Case Conference. Before the break, he was talking about liberal Christianity. Liberal Christian, he said, someone who will believe anything as long as it's not in the Bible. Here's more.
J. Gresham Machen called a religious liberal a Christian who is a religious liberal. Believes that there is a God without wrath who sent a son without a cross to save a man without sin. That's religious liberalism. Who would waste their time on this? But they stood for that. They stood against liberalism, and they stood for a scripture without error. And thirdly, they have emphasized personal evangelism, going to people, not waiting to be asked, but going out and seeking people out to present the gospel to them. And finally, they've emphasized the priesthood of all believers. Admittedly, I know more than probably you know about how it's been perverted, but evangelicals think they're all called to the ministry. I mean, every one of them has their own ministry. We were in a church in San Francisco when I was in law school. They had a ministry day. I think everybody and 360 people in the church each had a different table for a different ministry. Hi, I've got the AIDS ministry. I've got the rock and roll ministry. I have a surfing ministry. I'm not making this up. We have surfing ministries in California evangelical churches, skateboarding ministries, you know, all the everybody, though a probably less than optimal concept of the priesthood of all believers. They don't believe it's the pastor's duty to evangelize their neighbor. Lutherans have got this unique concept that this is part of the pastoral duty because we have such a high regard for our pastors, and we should, and they're so well trained. But the downside of that has been an almost immobilization of the laity to have confidence that they can present the gospel to their neighbor without screwing it up. That's what our real worry is as laity. Is that we're going to mess it up. It's better to bring them to pastor who got trained to do it, and they won't mess it up. So those are the glories of American evangelicalism. Now I will talk a little bit forth about the misery of American evangelicalism. What is the side that is less than optimal? Well, you turn on your TV, and you see the kind of higher life, sanctification orientation, holy living, higher life, prosperity gospel that you see over and over on television and in public ministries, where the doctrine of sanctification has taken over completely all Christian discussion. It's about zero objectivity. It's about zero cross, about zero use of words like death, sin, resurrection, cross, justification. None of these categories exist in American evangelicalism. If you hear an American evangelical preacher doing long gospel, I can basically guarantee you they are dipping into the Reformation. Evangelicalism doesn't have the categories of law and gospel. You think, oh, we just talk about law and gospel here like it's, oh yeah, I got a six-year-old understands law and gospel. The category doesn't exist. I once gave, when I was going through a lot of Luther stuff in the Baptist church, I had my junior high kids develop a doctrinal exam for the elders. Of course, my Sunday school class was a bit polemic. We trained them in apologetics. So we got together and we put a doctrinal exam together. And we asked the question, what are the two great doctrines of Scripture? And inevitably, every elder who had been a Baptist for 35 years said Old Testament and New Testament. Not one of them said law and gospel. And these kids were just eating it up. You are a gone loser. It's law and gospel. It's nothing like an eighth grader telling that to an elder, you know? Endeared us to the church, I know. But these categories simply do not exist. In American evangelicalism, sanctification has swallowed up justification entirely. As the gaze goes inward, these churches are defenseless to stand for what the church is called to stand for, which is the presentation of Christ crucified, the administration of the sacraments. The church now has everything else in it. 12-step this, parenting classes, daycare, counseling. They just don't have the gospel anymore. Secondly, they emphasize, unfortunately, now Christ is moral example. What would Jesus do? Many of these churches are very anti, also intellectual. They're not particularly historically oriented. So that you have people who distrust church history, they distrust creeds. Why do you have a creed? Why do you say the Lord's Prayer in your church? You're supposed to pray ex corde. That's the only kind of prayer God's ever allowed, is from the heart. If you have a written prayer, you obviously are a dead liberal. This is the mindset of general American evangelicalism in general. So it has an anti-intellectual vein to it. There's no question about it. And it's being fed, of course, as I mentioned last hour, by the Christian publishing houses. Very, very few books which are really attempting to analyze and deal with the climate of culture of our time. So this is the kind of situation in American evangelicalism. And I want to identify two kinds of evangelicals that are floating around out there. And by the way, they know this church exists. Guarantee you, if this place is Orthodox and there's a serious Bible-believing pastor, even if it's been hidden for a while, evangelicals know this place exists. I'm sure of it. And they're interested to know what is going on here. We'll talk about that in a moment. But there's two kinds of evangelicals. There's what I'll call a higher level one and a lower level evangelical. Higher level is a good Bible-believing Baptist. Okay? Who is burnt out and is seeing their church corroded from the inside. And it seems to have no defenses against every pop culture importation into the service. They're frustrated, but they have no other option but to hang around. Either that or leave the Christian church entirely. That's what I call the higher level evangelical. They are interested in a strong view of Scripture. They're interested in a church that's not being silly. They'll listen somewhat to church history. They want a sermon that's about Christ. They want their kids to get biblically literate. All of that would be attractive to them. Wish you could find a church that had creeds, that was biblically literate, that stood for the inerrancy of Scripture, that preached long gospel. If I could just tell them one to go to, that's Missouri Synod, right? I mean, that is a description of you, formally at least not some of the yahoos in California who are, you know, bringing their pet poodles down for communion and other nonsense. Okay, those are the higher level evangelicals. They are appealed to by the Reformation, and they are appealed to by basic Lutheran worship. And let me tell you, if you think you're going to attract them by being evangelical in worship style, they will smell you so fast, they will last about maybe one service and never come back. And you'll be sitting there going, why didn't they stay? Because they smell that you really wanted to be what they are leaving, which is a worship style that is vacuous, that is connected to pop culture, so it's connected to consumerism and sales, and they have been marketed beyond belief, and they're looking for a genuine, authentic Christian worship experience where they finally shut up and God talks. Okay, that's the higher level evangelical, and that's who I'm going to focus on, what our opportunity is with them, and give you some things that I've seen going on in the country with respect to higher level evangelical. Questions about how do you attract these people? First thing is, let them know you exist. When we became Lutherans, I set up a society called the Wittenberg Society of Santa Barbara. And we would hold lectures in the Lutheran Church on topics of interest to evangelicals. The first topic was on whatever happened to the evangel in evangelicalism. And you'd think, well, who's come to that? We packed out the congregation with evangelicals came to hear it. Why? Because they know they haven't heard the evangel in a long, long time. And they want to know why that happened. Rosenblatt did it. Then we had another guy come and do on music. Is it a prelude or a quaalude was the title of one of the lectures. And this guy played the organ and explained hymnody and then talked about the importation of musical forms that are not appropriate for what's going on in the service. Again, evangelicals flooding into this place. There's a conservative Lutheran congregation that's meeting now on the campus of our local Christian college. All they do is explain the literature they bring in evangelical students. This is absolutely brilliant. I told them, I can't believe you got to do this before I did. It ticks me off. I'm glad. And all they do is open the doors up and tell people Bible-believing liturgical service at 11 a.m. They vest. They explain. You get there 15 minutes early, and they go through the hymnal with them and explain exactly what they're going to do, which would be good for all the rest of the congregations to be doing to remind us why we have the liturgy and the Christ-centered nature of it. A couple of ideas that people are doing to attract the higher level evangelical. Well, what about the lower level evangelical? They have very little interest in this kind of thing, and generally they're doing Christian rock. For them, doctrine divides. They're not interested in really an informed Christian confessional position or not. And I wouldn't worry if you're not attracting them to the Lutheran church, because there's people ready to walk out of evangelicalism forever and maybe out of the Christian faith. And you are going to be their last hope. And there's those who have talked to me in this session already in the last day and a half. They were desperate, and they walked into a Lutheran church that was not embarrassed to be Orthodox Lutheran, to do the gifts that we've been given, not to hide them, but to do them with excellence, no matter if you have wonderful worship space like this or you've got space for 20 people. To do it well, the way our people are trained to do it. Those are lower level evangelicals, and I wouldn't worry about whether you attract them or not. Be there for them when their house of cards comes tumbling down. And it will come tumbling down when it comes to disasters in their life.
We're listening to Craig Parton making the case against Lutherans imitating evangelicals from the 2014 Issues, Etc. Making the Case conference. When we come back, he'll
go a little deeper into the tragic, sometimes tragic results of evangelical theology. Craig Parton is the author of the book, The Defense Never Rests, A Lawyer's Quest for the Gospel. You'll find a link to it under the Listen On Demand page at issuesetc.org or call Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. The Defense Never Rests by Craig Parton. 10 more minutes with him after this.
Christ-centered, cross-focused, you're listening to Issues, Etc.
Hello, this is Pastor Kevin Golden of Village Lutheran Church in Ladue, Missouri. The saints at Village Lutheran are proud to be part of the Issues, Etc. 300, sharing in their Christ-centered, cross-focused proclamation of the gospel. If you find yourself in St. Louis, join us on Sundays at 8:15 and 10:45 for the Divine Service, 9:30 for Bible study and Sunday school, as we receive Christ's gifts of forgiveness, life, and salvation. Or visit us on the web at www.villagelutheranchurch.org.
Hey, Todd, what have our listeners noticed first when visiting the LPR studios?
Definitely the small size and the dirt.
Well, not anymore, thanks to our friends at the Cleaning Authority. They've turned this man cave into a space that meets even our wives' approval.
Whether it's our office or your home, the Cleaning Authority is your cleaning service provider in the St. Louis area.
To schedule a free estimate or to find out more, visit thecleaningauthority.com. Thecleaningauthority.com.
Lutheran Talk.
In Lutheranism, I come as a guilty sinner in need of hearing the forgiving words of Christ every single time I gather. Every single time.
Lutheran music. The new Lutheran Public Radio app. Download for iPhone, Android, Windows Phone, and Kindle at issuesetc.org.
Do you have a student finishing up eighth grade at a Lutheran school? Do you wish there were a Lutheran high school close to where you live so your student could continue going to a Lutheran school? What if there was an opportunity for high school students in public or Lutheran school to take classes like Latin, logic, and hard-hitting theology courses? Well, there is. It's called Wittenberg Academy, the first completely online classical Lutheran high school. Visit our website, wittenbergacademy.org, to find out more.
Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. It's Thursday afternoon, April the 14th. We've got 10 more minutes as we listen to the 2014 Issues, Etc. Making the Case Conference with Craig Parton, making the case against Lutherans imitating evangelicals. A little bit later, in about 15 minutes, Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer is going to join us. We're going to talk about Christ in the Old Testament. We started a conversation on Isaiah 65 last week with them that we need to complete here, talking about judgment and salvation. That's coming up in about 15 minutes on the program. When we left off there with Craig Parton, he was talking about the meltdown that is inevitable among what he calls lower-level evangelicals, and we need to have the light on and the door open for them when they come. Here he is talking a little bit more about the sometimes tragic results of evangelical theology and practice.
In our town, I'm not telling tales out of school, but the largest evangelical church in town has had several prominent suicides recently. Never surprises me. What surprises me is more don't hang themselves sooner. They come in, they're higher life, it's everything's better and better. How you doing? What's the Lord doing in your life? Onward and upward. No concept that you come into church in need of repentance. As Luther said, no Christian is more than one day old. That we sin, we need forgiveness, and we move on. That we are simul justus et peccator. No concept of that in lower evangelicalism. So there's the situation. The higher evangelical, higher level evangelical is looking for some connection to Christ crucified. They're looking for something strong in the pulpit. And where do they go? What are their options for a seeking evangelical? Well, one of the first options of where they've gone en masse is Rome. You think, wait a minute, if there's one thing Baptists can't stand, it's a Catholic. Probably Lutheran second, but a good pope. The pope is the Antichrist. But if you think about it, while initially repulsive to many evangelicals, they actually soon conclude that Rome is simply a more formal and historical expression of what they've been getting from their evangelical pulpit for decades. Except now you pray the rosary. Now you climb up a different way. At least it's formalized. There's some historic liturgy. There's some mystery, which is what they're looking for. There's some structure there to old mainline Catholicism. Sanctification in Roman Catholicism spills over into justification and swallows it up. Fides formata in caritas, faith formed in love, puts kind of a Latin phrase over a lot of evangelical teaching. So they flock to Rome, and not just Rome, but to Eastern Orthodoxy. I mentioned our journey to Eastern Orthodoxy. Most serious alternative for evangelicals is Eastern Orthodoxy, going from a denuded church, no liturgy, no vestments, and at best a piccolo, no, a minimalistic instrumentation, let's put it that way. They go from that to full vestments, calling the priest father, standing during the service, incense. I mean, it's got to be pretty remarkable to get to that point. Eastern Orthodoxy says three things that evangelicals like. We don't like the Pope either. I mean, that sings to evangelicals. He's just one amongst equals. I shouldn't say they don't like him. It's just he's a little bit uppity. It's one among equals. Secondly, you get the same doctrine of justification as in Rome, as already mentioned by President Harrison. And third, you get a link to the earliest church, to mystery and to reverence and to liturgy. That's why Campus Crusade staff have gone there in droves. They've gone from extreme evangelical worship styles all the way over to extreme mysticism. They're attracting them all over the place. So if you don't go to Rome, you don't go to Eastern Orthodoxy, what are your choices? And by the way, neither of those offer the solas of the Reformation. But those aren't being taught in evangelicalism. That's the Reformation. As a family member, I'll leave it at that, says to me, Luther didn't go far enough. That's the problem with you Lutherans. You're so Catholic. You didn't go far enough. So, what are the options for the evangelical if they don't want to go Rome or Eastern Orthodoxy? They can go to the Reformation, where they will find the solas. But before they get to Luther, they're going to go to Calvin. And they're going to Calvin, and there's some of you who are Reformed who are here. They go to Calvin because they get a liturgy, they get a connection to church history, they get sacraments, they get a church structure of what they've been looking for, and there's something more American, I say American in the best sense, I guess, about Calvinism than Lutheranism. Maybe it's because Calvinism's so clean. No, no. It's Geneva, you know. Everything's kept up nicely on the streets. So, but it's an attractive. You have people like Mike Horton, the White Horse Inn, the growth of churches, the PCA churches, the Orthodox Presbyterian Church. And we have a lot in common with our Reformed brothers and as we go around. But they are Reformed. They are not Lutheran. So the options available are amazing. There's a lot of options. And several, two of them at least, have no solas of the Reformation. Only two options give them the solas. So, where do the people go who are going to Rome, to Orthodoxy, and to the Reformation in Geneva? They go to the most Orthodox expressions of it. Rarely does anybody convert out of evangelicalism to a liberal expression of another Christian tradition. You don't find people going from, I think I'll convert to Rome, but I'm going to go liberal Rome. It doesn't work that way. There's not enough substance there to have made that worthwhile. They convert to the most Orthodox expressions of Catholicism and Eastern Orthodoxy. People like Frankie Schaeffer, Scott Braun, or John Braun, Scott Hahn, and others have done this. So, the evangelical who comes to Lutheranism is going to be looking in general for the most Orthodox expressions of Lutheranism. They probably have gone through a significant struggle for years before they've entered into a Lutheran church. We could do better by doing a couple things for them. Number one, explaining what we're doing. I insist on this at our church. Our church has the blessing of me being president. So we do this all the time. I want the service explained regularly to me. I want to remember why the service begins the way it does, why it flows the way it does, and what's going on in each part of the service regularly. Evangelicals would benefit from this. And it's intimidating to walk into a church where they're supposed to use a hymnal and everyone is singing the liturgy and they're fumbling for some page on it. Help them out in doing this. How would I do it if I was here? I would have a midweek Vespers service that is as streamlined as possible. This is what Rosenblatt did in Southern California. And I can't tell you the number of converts to Lutheranism because he did this. He met midweek. They had a pipe organ. They sang a couple hymns. They did a confession of sin. They did the creed. They did the Lord's Prayer. And Rod preached 1 Timothy long gospel. And probably this room cannot fill the number of people that converted to Lutheranism via people from that situation. Because their Lutheran evangelicals could be safe. Sacrament wasn't going to be administered, so they didn't have to immediately deal with that. They could hear Reformation preaching, which is the greatest news in the world because it's about Christ and Him crucified for us, and they got that link to the historic church. We could do that, and I would advertise it completely. I would let people know this. So evangelicals are out there looking for what Lutheranism in many cases has left behind. People know that something, they're desperate, they're looking for some opportunity to find a church that has normalcy and content. That's what they come to find. They come to find what we have. We have the pulpit in generally in order. Even a bad Lutheran sermon is better than most of all the evangelical sermons that I heard because of the long gospel. And even if the pastor really is a loser in terms of a sermon giver, I get the liturgy. I get now 45, 50 minutes of Christ for me and the proper worship of our God as a result of gratitude for what He's done for me, and maybe 10, 15 minutes of a disaster. But that rarely happens. In evangelicalism, if the pastor had a bad day the day before, I got 50 minutes of agony followed by 10 minutes of horrible music, followed by special announcements, followed by the service from hell, which was also called July 4th service, where we flew the American flag and did all of those kinds of crazy things in the worship of our God. So, it's predictable. Worship is, Lutheran worship is built on a strong, long gospel preaching from the pulpit. Our service is formed by the hymnal. That's why I've imported into my garage boxes of the Lutheran hymnal 1941. Our church uses it. Why? Because the older saints wouldn't be comfortable moving away from it. Am I going to, I want to do the new hymnal. I'm going to do a new hymnal. I can lump it. These are people near death. They get comfort from the old hymnal. I can just lump it. God, pisses me off. It does. But my generation is so geared to, I've got to have what I want. And everybody in the synod's going that direction. Well, you know, these saints would really harm their conscience to do this. This is what they want to die in faith in, doing the liturgy in 5 and 15, and I've benefited from it. So we make those available to people, and something you can give, because churches have discarded those kind of en masse, you can always give a hymnal to somebody, and it's really helpful to take to a hospital, you know, where you can do a service from the Lutheran liturgy like that. It's a tremendous gift. Okay, this is what evangelicals are looking for. How do I know they're looking for this? They tell me this all the time. I know it's 4 o'clock, but I'm going to tell you this story because I couldn't make it up. When we left the Baptist church and became Lutherans, it's a big Baptist church, and about 20 of us became Lutherans at the same time and went to 2 Lutheran churches. Created havoc for a while, and then finally ended up in 1 Lutheran church. And there's another Lutheran church doing kind of happy-clappy stuff, and the big Baptist church split in half. And half of them needed a church to go to in the afternoon to do evangelical worship. And we knew these people. We knew the elders very well. And they went to this Lutheran church in the afternoon, and there was the hymnal in the pews there. And they began to look at that hymnal and were absolutely mesmerized by the hymnal. They wanted the pastor to show them how to worship using the hymnal. He wouldn't do it because he didn't use it anymore. Is this brand? You have a whole church waiting for you. And this is Dan Michelson. Dan's a good friend. He said, that hymnal is just wonderful. And the guy wouldn't do anything for us to help us do that. I mean, that is so brain dead stupid of us. It's beyond human comprehension that that would happen. That's how desperate evangelicals are when they find a hymnal that's Christ-centered to respond to it. And that's an opportunity that's there. So we have the pulpit in shape, we have the liturgy in shape, we have catechesis with Luther's small catechism. It's a great gift that it is. We ought to be placarding that in the community that we're in. Well, I know evangelicals who will drive past 10 LCMS churches to do the most orthodox and faithful expression of Lutheranism now that they can find. They drive back, they tell me, by 10 Lutheran churches. Now, this is California, so I understand. They're all kind of bundled. We all know where the Orthodox are. I mean, it's kind of like, I don't know, Jedi warriors or something. You know where they are. They will drive by these churches to find a faithful expression of Lutheran orthodoxy. They're looking for reverence and not entertainment. And all I can tell you is do not hide your lamp under a bushel. Let it shine. Let it shine as a light of Lutheran orthodoxy. It's the only hope for American evangelicalism, I believe. There aren't any other options where the doctrine of justification is central, that provides to them the security of a worship form that has Christ in the middle of it. I can only pray to God that when the prodigal son of evangelicalism comes home from whoring in a foreign land, that the light of Lutheranism is burning bright. Thank you, and may God bless Lutheran Church and what it does in terms of dealing with the American evangelical.
That's Craig Parton's presentation at the 2014 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, making the case against Lutherans imitating evangelicals. When we come back from this break, we're going to pick up our regular series, Christ in the Old Testament, with Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer, host of a weekly radio talk show called Redeemer Theological Academy. And we'll be in Isaiah 65 for part two of a conversation with him on judgment and salvation. Stay tuned.
Throughout the 50 days of Easter, sacred music for the world. LutheranPublicRadio.org. Listen 24/7 to sacred music for the Easter season. LPR, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Would you like to help a college or seminary student attend the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference? You can purchase a conference scholarship for a contribution of $100 to Issues Etc. You can donate online at issuesetc.org/scholarship. Or you can make your $100 check payable to Issues Etc. Write Scholarship in the memo line and send it to Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234.
Talk radio for recovering evangelicals. You're listening to Issues Etc.
I'm Pastor Watson. Are you tired of entertainment and in need of the peace that passes human understanding? I invite you to Augsburg Lutheran Church in Shawnee, Kansas, to receive the gifts of Jesus. Augsburg is scriptural, traditional, historical, sacramental, and reverent. The Church of the Apostles, the Councils, and the Reformers wants to be your church family also. For more information, visit us at augsburglutheranchurch.org.
College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois offers ACT, SAT, and PSAT test prep, scholarship application classes, college and career counseling, and more. Hi, this is Lori Konski, president of College Preparation Station. We have helped our students obtain more than $7 million in tuition scholarships in 12 years. Find out more at cpsprep.com. Let us help you create a vision and find your future. The College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois, cpsprep.com.